Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I'm your host, Matt Rossi. With me this week is my co-host, Joe Perez. We're just going to jump into stuff this week because, I don't really feel like we need to talk too much about what's going on in the world. Let's talk about something nicer, namely the Land of the Dead, where we're constantly trapped by a evil figure who's attempting to discover how to escape and destroy all human and all other things, Elfanity, Trollanity, Orcanity, Tornanity? I don't know, whatever, Shuhalonanity, I don't know. But at any rate, first up this week, Castle Nathria, LFR, and Mythic Raiding have started. I believe it's just wing one of Castle Nathria.
It is. I did it today.
And so if you haven't...
But wing one without Shriekwing.
Oh, okay.
So when you zone in, Shriekwing is already dead. You face off against wing one is, or LFR wing one is the Hungerer. The Huntsman, and I can't remember the lady's name, but basically Chief Anima person slash assassin lady something or other.
Is Shriekwing going to be in a different wing, or is it just straight up dead when you do it and you never fight
Shriekwing? So it's just straight up gone, and I think that's intentional. Shriekwing is an interesting fight to have as your introduction fight to the raid, and I think removing him was deliberate, and I think it was because that fight will... requires so much coordination. I don't know if a group of people in LFR could successfully do it.
Eventually the buff would get so high, but
yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. So yeah, also Mythic is open, so now the Mythic World Race is on, and you know, someone guild you've maybe never heard of or maybe you have heard of will win. I'm real jaded on Mythic World First stuff, guys. I don't know how it's going to go with this expansion. I hear that Castle Nathria, I haven't gotten into it yet, straight up. I just hit 60 on my first character, and I'm just trying to get this character up. But from what I understand, Nathria has required a bit more coordination than previous raids.
Yeah.
And so I think that this will be a slightly longer Mythic race than usual. I don't know if we're going to end up with another situation where guilds hammer through it with sheer gold. That's kind of been how the last couple Mythic races have gone. The guild that ultimately ends up winning spends untold amounts of gold to do it. I don't know if that'll be the case this time. I do think that the Shadowlands has changed things up with Soulbinds and so forth. But I do think we should watch and see how much the top world first guilds are spending, because that will probably control what happens next. Also, this is the starter raid, and generally speaking, the world first battle doesn't really heat up until we start getting into later raids. Like for Battle for Azeroth, I think the first time I really cared about World First was with Queen Ashara and Nyalotha. Those were the ones I really watched. The stuff before, did you really care that much who got World First as Aralor? I mean, some people obviously did, but it didn't feel like it didn't feel real to me until mid-tier of the expansion. So we'll see what happens this time. I don't know how complicated people are going to want to get here.
Well, not only that, but Padilla in chat makes a very good point too. With Titan Forging and War Forging gone, thankfully, It reduces a lot of the money that can be thrown at the world first races, because a lot of times that's what they were looking for in running multiple things, to try to get Warforging and Titanforge procs to get better stat allocation, stat budgets, sockets, and things like that, to try to sort of outgear the budget for the content, and that's not really an option now.
Gearing is definitely slower this time, and that stuff that you just mentioned, Titan Forging and War Forging, is gone. There's no corrupted items to look for. So yeah, I think legendaries are going to be the main focus, and that's the kind of stuff you kind of have to do yourself.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens with that. But that's in the game now. So if you're the kind of person who doesn't do normal raiding but you do LFR, then you now can start working on Castle Nathria LFR. I forget what the gear level is for it. I think it's like 180.
For Castle Nathria?
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit higher than that, because 184 is Mythic Zero.
Maybe it's one. It's higher. I don't know. But yeah.
I want to say it's like 190 to 200. I'm going to double check. Keep talking.
But while we're talking about that, I'm going to mention this briefly. WoW Classic is essentially done, because Naxxramas came out and got cleared like in an hour and a half. So yeah, that's done. What are we going to see next? I don't know. I assume, like, based on a lot of speculation and a lot of, you know, Blizzard themselves asking people about it, I think we're probably going to see Burning Crusade servers. I don't know how that's going to work.
Item level 200, by the way.
Okay, thank you. So item level 200 for Castle Nathria LFR.
Or normal. Sorry, not LFR.
For normal? Okay, yeah. We're talking LFR here. So that would be...
Raid Finder is 187. Still higher than Mythic.
Okay, but it's not much higher.
No.
All right. So, yeah, moving to the WoW Classic discussion, my theory, and I'm going to ask Joe what he thinks, my theory is we're going to see Burning Crusade servers. I don't think they're going to put Burning Crusade servers, they're going to turn every server to a WoW Classic Burning Crusade. I think they're going to put in dedicated Burning Crusade servers. But I don't think we're going to see anything more than that this year at the, you know, for sure. Like, I definitely, if you're expecting a Wrath of the Lich King, don't expect it in 2021.
Yeah.
But what do you think, Joe?
I think that's very likely. I think we'll probably hear more about it at the Digital BlizzCon when that goes down. They'll probably make it a point. And I also think that there are going to be, because I don't think people realize how much the game changed even from vanilla to Burning Crusade. I think you're right. I think that there will be server clusters that have both, and then ones that are dedicated purely vanilla. And then depending on how Burning Crusade goes, whether they expand that out and add more to the pool, or whether they start looking at other expansions, it's all going to be variable and it's all going to depend. But I don't think we're going to get any further than probably a solid announcement on Burning Crusade being when it's going to wind up being a thing and how many servers are going to stand up for it for populations. So,
yeah. And you have to remember, too, they'll have to decide what version of Burning Crusade to use. Just like they did with WoW Classic. WoW Classic based itself around patch 1.12.
Yep.
And that's important, because the game at patch 1.2 was very different than 1.6 or 1.8 or 1.12. There were a lot of rules changes along the way, and the same thing happens. There's a point during Burning Crusade when they made a change to allow Thunderclap to hit more than four targets. And they had to do that because warrior tanks were literally useless.
Mm-hmm.
In five mans, you would not bring them, like, to the point where up until you got to raiding, paladins and druids absolutely destroyed warriors as tanks. Everybody had a paladin or a druid tank in five mans. And then you got to raiding and suddenly bosses did stuff that only shield block could handle.
Yep.
And the tanks you geared up, the tanks you were so desperate to get, the tanks you were like, we don't need warriors anymore, thanks, were dying. They were getting destroyed. Like, they'd do great through the trash. And then you walk up to a boss and the boss would kill them. And I know this is what happened because I was there, and I remember getting recruited by a guild that just could not get past Karazhan. They couldn't do it because they didn't have any warrior tanks. And this isn't great for anybody. This wasn't great for warriors because we were persona non grata until suddenly people were like, oh God, we're in raids and we're dying. It wasn't great for paladins and druids, because imagine you'd been your guild's main tank the whole expansion. You'd leveled your character up to 70. You've done all the work to carry your character, your guild through all the heroic dungeons to get yourselves ready for Karazhan. You walked into Karazhan and you started getting destroyed on bosses. Not because you were doing badly, not because you weren't playing your class right, because you just couldn't deal with this stupid mechanic that required shield block to push it off the table. That's just was terrible. And that is the kind of mechanic you're going to see. You're going to see, I remember seeing Paladin tanks in Hyjal. We were doing the Hyjal raid. One Paladin tank we had to repair his shield after every pull. Like, he literally had to get, like, he'd leave the raid and go repair his shield. Or bring, like, he started collecting shields from other boss fights, or just had, I think he had 3 shields from various raids that he just carried around with him, because his shields would just get destroyed. And that's just a really weird mechanic based on one of the Paladin abilities. And that kind of thing is going to be there. They're going to have to pick what's the least onerous version of this. Do we just go with, like, the very last patch, like we did with WoW Classic? The reason they did that in WoW Classic wasn't because they, you know, they just thought, well, we'll stick with the... It's because they found a version of original WoW at that patch.
Mm-hmm.
So this time with Burning Crusade, I don't know how they're going to... But I think they're definitely going to have to think long and hard. Okay, how are we going to do content releases? And how are we... Like, let me ask Joe, what do you think they should do for content releases if they do Burning Crusade WoW Classic?
I don't even know what I would pick for that. Like, that's... I haven't really given that any thought. I don't know how I would want them to do that, or what I think would be the best way to do that. Because, I mean, Burning Crusade was a weird release cycle for content, wasn't it? Like, it's been a long time.
Yeah. Part of the problem was for Burning Crusade. I don't know if you guys... If you were playing, like, original WoW at the time and you went into the Burning Crusade, you went from a 40-man raid group to a supposedly 25-man raids. So, you thought, okay, we're going to lose about 15 people. We're just not going to have space for as many people.
I mean, I was in a guild that wound up running 2 raid groups because...
Yeah, because the other thing is the introductory raid of Burning Crusade was a 10-man raid.
Yeah.
Karazhan. So they told you you're going to lose, you know, we're going from 40 to 25, but then they jammed you through a 10-man.
Yeah, so, I mean, I believe that the release cycle, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was Karazhan first, Gruul's Lair, then Magtheridon's Lair. I think Gruul's and Magtheridon's were at the same time. They were the first ones.
I think Gruul's might have been a little, like a week or so earlier. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But they were basically at the same time.
Those three
started, and they were it for at least a few months.
Yeah, and then Serpentrine Cavern came after that.
Not long after that.
Yeah, the Eye came after that. Then it was Battle for Mount Hyjal. Then Black Temple, and then finishing off with Sunwell.
But we forgot Zulamon.
Ah, that's right. Zulamon was in there as well.
It came out after Black Temple.
It did.
Yeah. In fact, a lot of people were going into Zulamon to get alternate gear because they weren't getting it in Black Temple. And the gear was about the same level. I think it was a little lower than Black Temple, but there were some really good pieces. There was a tanking helmet that looked ridiculous. It looked like you were wearing a chicken for a face, but it was really good. I used it for a very long time. Zulamon actually had some really compelling drops, and they were around the same level as Black Temple gear. I think they were a little below it, but not by much. And then that was also because of the badge situation. Badges of Justice were a thing. Because of that, there was the vendor that came with the Sunwell.
Mm-hmm.
And that vendor, you could basically, for Badges of Justice, you could buy Black Temple level gear. A lot of Fury Warriors were using the two-fist weapons that vendor sold because they were just amazing. They were as good as anything. They were the only thing better than them that was in the game at the time, because Sunwell hadn't actually opened yet, was the Warglaives. If you had the Warglaives, you didn't have to worry, but otherwise these fist weapons were as good or better than anything else. I would think for content, I would actually try and shake it up where I would put Karazhan out first, and then I'd put out Gruul's and Magtheridon, and I would then stagger it a lot more. I would have Serpentrine come out, and then I would have Tempest Keep come out.
Yeah, but the problem,
Black Temple and Hyjal and Black Temple come out.
The problem they're going to run into is going to be the same problem that they run into right now, which is how quickly the content gets cleared.
Yeah, but the difference is there's a lot more attunements in BC. Remember, you had to attune to even get into Karazhan.
That's true.
And then you had to attune to even get into Tempest Keep. And you had to beat both Vaj and Kael'thas to get into Mount Hyjal for a very long time. I think they removed that at some point, but
they did, yeah.
For a while you had to like get through those two, and I remember my guild beat Kael'thas the week before they changed it. Like, we finally got him down. We were like, "Yes, we can finally go to Burning Temple, Black Temple." Next week Black Temple's open. Cuz you had to go to Hyjal first to go to Black Temple. That's the other thing. Ton of attunements. So there's going to be a lot of the attunements will artificially slow down progression, and you can artificially slow it down more. Plus, while we have had, I think you're definitely going to see what you're saying. People are going to blow those raids up really fast. I don't think they're going to be as fast.
Well, because they introduced way more mechanics than the
About the Kael'thas fight.
Yeah.
Even knowing what's coming, even with all those videos and stuff telling you what to do with, and even with the fact that it's not going to run at like 3 frames per second, Kael'thas is still like at level. Kael'thas is a fight, man. There's a lot going on. Like, you have to have somebody run out and pick up the proper legendary or get the, like, I remember when I was tanking it, people had to run up to me in open trade during fights to hand me the shield because I didn't have time to get it. Like, I had to like go pick stuff up. I was busy. So people would run up to me and hand me the shield to fight Kael'thas so that I could. And that's another thing. If you're a druid, you just could not tank Kael'thas.
Mm-hmm.
But you had to have the shield that made it, you know, survivable. And so if you're a druid, tank something else, I guess. So, yeah, I do think we're going to see Burning Crusade, and I think it's going to be staggered out pretty far. But, yeah, at this point, we're just speculating, so we should probably move on to some other news. And this is actual news, although it is certainly, to a degree, somewhat speculative. The Diablo 4 quarterly developers update went live today as we're recording this on the 15th. If you haven't looked at it, I suggest you go look at it. It doesn't give any story stuff, so it's not exactly spoilers, but this is a pretty deep dive on what they're going to do with mechanics. First up, they've decided the skill tree system that they talked about the last quarterly update, the way that they're going to work, which is basically, it's a very similar to like it's an expanded early 21st century version of the Diablo 2 system to a degree. If you've played a modern game, you know what skill trees work. This one's pretty elaborate, and they've decided that they like it and that they're pretty much, this is the direction it's going to go. From this point on, they're iterating on the skill tree system. There's no chance of them scrapping it. Well, I can't say no chance, but there's little chance of them scrapping the skill trees and doing something else. It's probably going to be the skill tree, but they're going to iterate on it. One of the things they're doing is changing it so that the skill tree clusters better. So if you're trying to, say, build a whirlwind build, the stuff that you want to make whirlwind better will be closer to whirlwind, and you won't have to go as far away to get it. That's one thing they're doing. The other thing they're doing is they're putting in respecking. But the way they're doing respecking is going to be familiar to anyone who played Battle for Azeroth and remembers respecking their Azerite gear. In that you have unlimited respecs. You can respec as many times as you want, but every time you respec, it becomes more expensive to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't one that will flush. Like, if you don't do it for a while, it will go down. As it stands right now, there's no mention of that. It's just as you respec, it gets more expensive. There might be a cap, like once you get to a certain point.
They didn't introduce the decay until Wrath, right?
Oh, you mean actual talent respecking?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they didn't do that until Wrath. And in fact, but then again, it respecking, when they first put respecking in, which again, if you played original World of Warcraft, respecking was not in the game until like patch 1.4. If you played for the first few months, your talents were permanent. Like, you spent a talent, it was spent. That was your character now.
1.1. Yeah.
All right. So more recently than I thought. I mean, more quickly than I thought. Because I just remember like people telling me that and being like, oh God, I really wish I hadn't taken that talent. But the way this is going to work, you can always respec, and it'll be cheap at first. So they want to encourage people to take talents and play around. I keep saying talents when I mean skills. It's basically the same thing. You take skills, play around, figure out what you want to do, and then when you start getting an idea, oh, I want to do this, then you'll be able to do it. You'll go all in on it, but it won't be free. Like, there will be an ascending cost, so that when you are fully along in the game, you're max level, and you're in end game, you will be disincentivized from switching talents and skills because they want you to develop a playstyle and feel unique compared to other characters. Another way they're doing this, I don't know, did you get a chance to read this at all, Joe, or am I going to like be babbling a lot here?
Mostly, I just picked a little bit through it, so I'm going to be relying on you for the Diablo stuff, my friend.
Yeah, that's a surprise for everybody. Rossi can't talk about you. But to get to the next thing they've done, they've decided to make stat allocation a thing again.
I'm okay and with that.
If you play Diablo 3, they just allocated your stats for you when you leveled up. They're like, okay, you're a barbarian, you get stronger. Here, they're basically putting it back up to you. And one of the things about that is, in a role-playing game, I was talking about this with Liz in work chat today. One of the points she made was that in most RPGs, this is an illusion of choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's really no reason to spend points anywhere but on your primary stat.
To that I say, my Diablo 2 characters say, ha!
the point is still valid.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
If you were pushing the hardest content in Diablo 2, you spent it where you could get the most damage.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you did. If you weren't, then you could do what you wanted. They're making this system more like one of the things they did was that yes, you're a barbarian, you're going to want strength. No one's pretending, but they've made it so that both willpower and dexterity do things for you. And you're not going to want to just dump everything into strength all the time. You're going to want to get one of those two things, or at least, because willpower increases fury generation. And you want fury generation. You want to be able to do more stuff. And dexterity increases crit chance. And I don't have to tell you that you want to critically hit things, because that is just, we play role-playing games where it's wired into us. Critting is good. And this is the same for like the sorceress. They make it so dexterity actually increases mana generation. So the principle is if you're nimble, then you're quick both in body and mind, and you get your mana generation back faster. And, you know, again, constant like willpower will also give you benefits. And they're making it so there are, when you have a skill, you could buy like various skills. There are also skill nodes that basically just make a skill better. Like the example they used was Whirlwind. If you have a higher dexterity, then you'll unlock a special benefit if you take this node. If you have a higher strength, you'll unlock a special benefit when you take that node. So you could actually be a dexterity barbarian who prioritized dexterity to a degree, so you could do stuff that would get you more movement speed and quicker strikes and be like a more crit heavy build. But the strength build would get more critical damage. So if you do crit with that build, it hits harder and does more damage. So you could basically play around with building your character. And that's what makes the skill respecking thing more interesting, because you could go for a flavor of build. Like there could be strength druids. Like maybe you'll focus more on your shapeshifting and you'll be a strength druid versus being a, you know, willpower druid who builds around spell casting. We don't know yet for sure because we haven't seen the whole thing, but that's the kind of thing that could happen. I'm interested in seeing how this works. I think that this making stat allocation is something you actually have to think about. Not just, oh, I'm a barbarian, so I have an 8 int, but to really actually focus on what you're going to do and like how you want to build it. That's interesting to me. It doesn't mean it's going to work. We have seen this kind of thing before in various other games, but I am cautiously optimistic about it. There's more to this, of course. There's also the thing that they talked about, and we're going to stop at this point because it's already almost 7, and I don't want the entire podcast to be talking about before, but they've also talked about how they're going to be doing legendary affixes and unique items.
Seen unique items since Diablo 2, right? Like
there are uniques in Diablo 3.
Were there?
Yeah, most of them are weapons, but no, there's like unique helmets and so forth. Absolutely, there are.
Huh.
There's, for instance, that pair of shoulders that makes you things shower you with gold when you kill things. That's a unique legendary item. It's not a set piece.
Oh, yeah. Well, those are unique legendaries, I think, were a little bit different than what I'm thinking. Because, like, in Diablo 2, unique items were their own class all in of themselves, and it looks like they're bringing that back.
Yeah, but it's still basically the same thing. Just because they made the legendary items, it didn't change the fact that they were basically still the same. It's basically that. But by making them absolutely... By going... A lot of the stuff they're doing here, with the unique items, with the way legendary affixes are working... I think, again, Liz and I were talking, and I think Liz had a good point that it feels like they're trying to slow the game down a bit. Because one of the things about Diablo 3 is it's an extremely frenetic game.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of time wasted on stuff like, I need to decide between, you know, attributes. Nope, you just get the attributes. It isn't until you start getting Paragon points you make any actual choices about where you spend them. And there's a lot to that idea that this definitely feels like a game that is slowing itself down a little bit and bringing more variety into player choice. It's kind of amping up the RPG elements of Diablo, whereas Diablo 3 was definitely a game that sort of stepped like away from them a bit. In a way, Diablo 3, especially with Torment levels and with the greater Nephilim Rifts, Diablo 3 is a roguelike. Like, if you actually stop and think about it, Diablo 3 in a lot of ways is a roguelike.
Yeah, it kind of is, because even like no matter which way you slice it, like, especially adventure mode, it really does play like a roguelike, doesn't it?
Yeah, and this is kind of moving away from that a little bit, which I think is a good move because you're not going to beat Hades. Don't try. Maybe somebody else can at this point, but I don't think Blizzard is not the kind of company that's going to deliver that sort of agile.
Yeah, I mean, They even moved away from that a little bit with Torghast too.
Yeah, and I think Torghast to a certain degree is actually a good example of how Blizzard excels at development. I think Torghast is one of the best things they've done, but that's got nothing to do with this. My point being that with the changes to everything that we're seeing, it definitely feels like Diablo 4 is going for a slightly more measured, more role-playing game approach. It still feels like a Diablo game. I mean, I don't think I'm going to be naming my barbarian, but then again, they are bringing in customization levels that are unheard of to a Diablo game.
And we named our characters in Diablo too.
Yeah, but you were doing it even though you all looked exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, whereas here, there's a level of customization for what your character looks like in Diablo 4 that is significant for a Diablo game. It's not even as much as what World of Warcraft now has in Shadowlands, but it's still way more than Diablo has ever had. Like, you can control, if you play a female barbarian, which you can do, you can play male or female for pretty much anything. If you play a female barbarian, you can change your hair color, you can change your skin color. Obviously, they're all human, because my dreams of playing a demon in Diablo are, you know, never going to actually happen. But yeah, it's interesting. I think in general, what we're looking at for Diablo 4 is a game that's taking it a little slower and is trying to get back to its roots to some degree. And its roots being Diablo 2, because nobody counts Diablo as the roots of the, you know, Diablo 2 is the game that made Diablo what it is. As I remember once saying, even if Diablo 3 is legitimately, even if you honestly think Diablo 3 is better than Diablo 2 in every conceivable way, that's like saying, well, this modern band I like is better than the Beatles. It doesn't matter. Even if you're right, even if everybody in that band is way better than the Beatles, which I can't prove, and that's completely subjective, but it wouldn't matter if you were right, because they're not the Beatles. The Beatles are the Beatles. Their place in music history is assured. There's literally nothing that can be done about this. And it's like saying, you know, I don't like J.R.R. Tolkien. I cannot like J.R.R. Tolkien all I like. Who cares? He still wrote the books he wrote. They're still out there. They're still titans. Dune is still one of the most colossal science fiction books of all time, no matter what you think of the writing of it. And to a degree, that's Diablo. With Diablo 2, Diablo 2 is that game. And it's not a surprise to me that they'd want to bring some of the feeling of that game back. A lot of people still love Diablo 2. A lot of people are still playing Diablo 2.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can make their new game resonate with people who liked Diablo 3 whilst also bringing in people from Diablo 2, this is not a surprise to see a company do this. We've seen it as recently as, you know, Assassin's Creed Valhalla tried to harken back to Assassin's Creed Origins, and it tried to harken back to games before Origins. It tried to harken back to, like, Assassin's Creed 2, because those games have a built-in audience that really love them, and you're going to want to try and bring those people back. It's logical. But I think that's enough on that. Do we have anything else?
I think that's really about it.
All right, then. At this point, we will do that thing where we move on to the questions and emails. A lot of these ones actually came from our Discord servers, so thanks to you guys on Discord. If you have a question for the show, first off, you can email it, and please do, because it's a wasteland of Lore Watch questions in there right now, guys. I considered stealing a couple, but I didn't want because that's mean. But if you can email us, the email is podcast@blizzardwatch.com, the subject line podcast or Blizzard Watch for this show. Or you can do that thing where you like for either show, in which case, whichever one of us gets there first. It's like watching a couple of dogs fight over a bone, really. It's not pretty, but you can do that if you want. Or you can go to our Discord server, the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel we look at first. Then there's the Huge Questions channel we also look at. You can do that for this show or Lore Watch, but, you know, again, please do it for this show, because I needed some questions this week, guys. It was a wasteland. Joe, as always, is going to read them for us, so if you don't mind, Joe.
Not at all. Our first question, maybe this was asked earlier, but if demons are supposed to go back to the plane they came from and not to the Shadowlands, why do you fight at least two of them in the Theater of Pain in Maldraxxus? And I believe that is from Metal Zani. Because the brokers capture them?
Yes, literally. There's even a quest where you go to some weird plane of existence and you capture a thing to bring to the arena.
Yeah. Like, literally, as part of you proving your worth to the broker that you're dealing with in order to even participate in the arena games at all, is basically, do me a favor, go get me this monster, and you go through a portal, through one of the broker portals, and it takes you to another planet, or plane of existence, or somewhere. We don't know where, and you beat the living snot out of a creature until you can trap it in a Pokeball, and then yep. it goes back to Maldraxxus. So.
Boy, that quest is easy to miss. I just started doing it on this character that I'm doing for the stream. It's really not very centrally placed, and it's not at all involved in the story of Maldraxxus. But I recommend doing it because A, it gives a really good weapon for the level, and B, it's very interesting to see Maldraxxus not as a place where all these machinations are happening, but just the rank and file of Maldraxxus. What are they up to? What does, you know, Joe average Maldraxxite do with his day? Turns out he likes to watch pit fighting a lot, and they have a really big arena that they like to watch fighting in. And you can do that. And if you remember all those various quests going back to like Burning Crusade and Wrath with arenas full of weird fighting stuff, here you go. It's back. So yeah, I definitely recommend doing those. But yeah, there's like also like there's other stuff in those fights, not just demons. There's also like, I mean, there's weird, there's like Scourge dragons. They're actual dragons. They're like Saffron type dragons, ones from Azeroth type things. They're there. You fight one of them. So yeah, it's an interesting thing.
Yep. The next question for Blizzard Watch. Greetings, you watchers of the Blizzard. Two non-lore questions for you. If you could assign a music genre to each zone in the Shadowlands, what would you pick? If you could have a follower to adventure with you in Shadowlands, who would you pick from the past to adventure with? Thanks for everything you do, and I believe that is from Riptide, I think.
Name is above the question, that's who it's from.
Ah, I apologize. So that one's from Metal Zani. The first one didn't have a name associated with it. I apologize. So yeah, music for each zone. That's a tough one.
Well, Draxus is some form of like, you know, like hardcore about heavy metal band.
I mean, yeah, it's basically the cover of every Iron Maiden album ever created. If you just look around Maldraxxus,
actually go to like, I guess Iron Maiden is a safe one to go with.
There's I'm trying to be safe.
Yeah, like Man of War or something, I would probably go with from Maldraxxus. Or one of those bands that, like, let's be completely honest, one of those bands that Samwise likes to do cover art for.
Because that's basically it, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think that you'd go with some kind of metal song. Bastion feels like it's soundtrack music. Like, you know how every...
Like movie scores, almost?
Like, Two Steps from Hell comes out with, like, a song that gets used in the commercials for, like, every movie for the past 10 years. Like, do, 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 do. Like, if you remember the Black Widow... trailers that were coming out, that music, that's Bastion. Sweeping, orchestral, sounds like somebody's about to fight somebody else, like that kind of thing. That's definitely, for me, that would be Bastion. I would actually think I would go with Kings and Creatures for them. Like, I actually listen to a lot of soundtrack music, so I actually have some, like I said, Two Steps from Hell or Kings and Creatures do a kind of stuff. Like, I would go with Audio Machine. Because they do a lot of that. So yeah, I would go with something like that. That's Bastion for me. What do you think?
I would tend to agree. I don't think I have a better answer for that. I think that fits pretty well, actually.
For Ardenweald. Part of the problem here is that the music for Ardenweald is pretty perfect for Ardenweald. So I almost just want to say that, but I'll try and not do that. I don't really know. If you weren't just going to say Anya, and I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair for Ardenweald. I think Ardenweald is a more interesting place than that. And that's not me dogging on Anya. I just feel like that, you know, that's me giving you a stereotypical answer. Anya's actually a really fascinating musician if you actually want to study her work. But we don't have time, and I'm not an expert. But I do think that there's a lot of there's a Mummer's Dance. You guys remember the Mummer's Dance? That song kind of reminds me of Ardenweald a little bit, but not really. I'm drawing a blank on Ardenweald. What about you, buddy?
So Ardenweald is a weird mishmash, and it's a hard one to place. And I think about some of this. I don't want to say a lot, but I've been thinking a lot about how well the music fits with Ardenweald. I normally play with music off in game. I don't this expansion, but I get this almost like folksy cinematic vibe from it, where everything is very expressive. All of the NPCs you interact with are very expressive. Everything has a sort of whimsy or tension to it. And it feels very almost like if you were watching a
movie.
Yes, something like that. Or if you wanted to go something a little more cinematic-y, anything you look towards like from like the 70s, almost like any of those would fit really well, because there's this intersection of like folksy emotional music, and then some of them crescendo into big sweeping climactic moments, and it fits. So like your classic Bob Dylan stuff, some of the original Paul Simon stuff, things like that seem to actually fit well with the cadence of the zone. But that's just my two cents.
For me, the Maw is "Come On Eileen" by Dexy Midnight Runners. Not kidding. Don't sing that song sometime. Like, it's actually really hard. You actually get the message. I know that it sounds like, "Come on, Eileen, oh, I swear." But here's the thing. Here's going to be a little bit where Matt sidetracks into music stuff. Dexy's Midnight Runner is basically a band named after speed.
Yeah.
Dexedrine. Yep. That's what they're called, Dexy's Midnight Runners. The song "Come On, Eileen" is about the, you know, realizing that your life wasn't going to go the way you wanted it to go, and that, you know, you and this person could be in love, but you were never going to have a good life. You were just going to always be where you were. Like, let's run away from this. It's kind of like when people said they wanted Born to Run to be the soundtrack for, like, New Jersey. They wanted it to be the official music, and people had to point out Born to Run is about how craptastic the place they are is and how they should escape it. That's what, you know, Come On Eileen is about. Let's get out of here. It's terrible here. So that's why the Maw for me, it's Come On Eileen. It's straight up. I wasn't being sarcastic.
And
Matt knows more about Come On Eileen than you expected. Runner up for that was going to be Big Country.
Yeah.
In a big country. Yeah. Seriously, the Maw is one of those places. It's, you know, music about how much you want to get out is the kind of music that works for the Maw.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Revendreth for me is straight up 1995 alt rock. Like, no question about it. It's all about vampires and angst and emotion and sin and decadence and revolution.
Here's a song, and I don't know if this agrees with you or disagrees with you. I honestly don't know. So here is my pick for Revendreth. Black Number One.
Okay.
Black Number One by Typo Negative.
Yeah, Typo Negative would definitely fit into that. That was like 93 alt metal. Yeah.
But very much one of those bands that, you know, you always ended up hearing at every, you know, I'm just going to admit it. I went to some LARPs. Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, if you went to Vampire LARPs, that was on the soundtrack 100% of the time.
I remember I was going to a Vampire LARP directly after a group of us went to see the Vampire movie with Bill Paxton in it. Do you remember it?
I do.
Name of the movie.
Can't remember it. Not the name, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And we went to see that movie. Then we went to LARP and I was like, yeah, I'm done LARPing. I'm never going to feel less than awkward. I just don't feel right doing this, but yeah, Typo Negative is my pick for Revendreth.
Yeah. It fits right into that. And this is my music nerddom. Cause I've been for a little fun fact about me, I've been playing guitar for 32 years now. And I actually fronted a ska band in the 90s cause I was a weird kid. But the 90s was very much like this alternative to thing. It was very, very big, and it was alternative to metal, alternative to rock. Alt rap was starting to become a thing. Alt hip hop was starting to be a thing.
Trying to like explain like the way alternative changed in the 90s. It's like in 1991, a band called Mr. Big put out a song called
Do you want to hear a fun fact about that song? It was recorded in my childhood home.
Okay. I'm sorry to hear that. But that was like the biggest song in the world for a little while.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
Why don't you know what it was? Because a band called Nirvana happened.
Yeah.
And the 90s didn't know how big Nirvana was going to be for like a year. They had no idea. After Smells Like Teen Spirit came out, people were still trying to put out other kinds of music. And it just sort of did not happen. Without that event, bands like Pearl Jam would never have broke. You never would have heard of R.E.M. R.E.M. was already out and putting out songs way before that. They were like putting out stuff in the 80s, but most people today wouldn't know who they were.
Yeah, until you get to their 90s albums, and then alternative rock really opened that up. But that's what Revendreth feels for me, because that's sort of what's happening in Revendreth. It's this cultural revolution that is starting to happen because it's been perverted. It's been twisted from what its original form was. So every single time I'm in Revendreth, I have like literally like the soundtrack to Empire Records going on in my head. Like, it is 100% like alt music across the board, because it just, to me, it fits that zone. And we haven't even gotten onto the adventurer NPCs that you would go with either. So
I mean, I'm not sure what you're asking me, like characters from WoW.
Yeah, I think that's what they're asking is like, if you had a if you could have a follower to adventure with, basically, if you could have a party like you do in like Dragon Age or any of the RPGs where you get to bring somebody with you, who would you pick from the past to adventure with? And let's keep it to like WoW, just because we get really weird and existential if we go real life on this one.
I guess maybe Karen Bloodhoof.
Yeah,
I mean, I've Karen since he died. That's one of the reasons I stopped really playing my Tauren. I tried to pick it up, but with Karen gone, the Horde changed, and it's not Bane's fault that he wasn't really able to stop it, because Bane is just Bane. Karen was the old bull. I'd be interested to see what, you know, I'd be interested to just get to see Karen again. Quite frankly, I feel like that needs to happen for Bane's healing. Karen should show up and be like, it's okay, son. But yeah, I think Karen Bloodhoof. I would like to see Karen again.
I honestly would love to go with one of two characters, and these are both Pandaren. Either Lili Stormstout, because I absolutely love the infectious, inquisitive, don't back down, scrappy-do nature of her as a character. And I think that she just approaches things in such a amazing way. I think she would be absolutely fantastic to be adventure with, especially now in the Shadowlands. Or Lorewalker Cho, because we're gathering history.
Yeah, but do you remember what it's actually like to go to places with Lorewalker Cho?
I loved it. Loved it.
Well, you know, canonically, Lorewalker Cho is the cause of all of your problems.
Yes, but also, so am I, so I'm okay with it. I push buttons when I see them.
Possibly you're going to say the Peppers guy.
Yes, he is, which is still my favorite quote in the game. Yeah. But yeah, it's I don't know. Like, I think those would be my picks just for that, because I'd love to see Lorewalker Cho gathering stories that he had never heard before. So, Audi Luke in chat is saying Medan, but I almost want to kick him out of chat for that. You're lucky, sir.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that. Honestly, I'm going to be upfront here. I would like to bring Medan back into canon
in a different way. Give him some love and attention.
One thing, I don't think he'd be Medan anymore, because I don't like the idea of Medivh and Garona having a baby. That just seems weird to me.
No, but they could approach it differently, right?
I would like the idea of, you know, she just had a kid. She named him after Medivh because they had a thing. They were like, you know, there was a period of time where she knew him and, you know, was dealing with him. Maybe she, you know, liked him. I don't know. But she, you know, I'd like to see Garona as a mom. That would be fine. For one thing, WoW needs more moms. WoW needs more moms that are just around. Alive and not,
I was just gonna say more moms that are actually alive,
less dead moms, thanks. But also I feel like the idea of a character who's trying to figure out what he wants to do with himself and like what, you know, doesn't have to be the Guardian of Tyr's fall, that whole thing, you know, he got this I'd say he got the special power up for an emergency, then he passed it on to the Tyr's Fallen because that's what happened.
And honestly, and, like, the idea of dealing with mixed race offspring. And we talked about this, I think we had a question here a couple months ago. And I think we also had a question about it a couple months ago, around the same time on Lore Watch, about canonically, like, can races, the different races breed or have offspring together? And I'd like to actually see that addressed with some of that. I'd like to see, you know, what happens when Azeroth becomes the melting pot that it's been basically poised to become for how many years now? Like,
yeah, there's stuff you could do with it. It would be interesting. And I definitely think you could do stuff with Garona and her kid. Mm-hmm. I've never been a really big fan of that whole revelation that, you know, she and Medivh.
No, we can skip that. That could be a non thing. That's fine.
Or if you really feel like you need to preserve it, then fine. But I would, if I were doing it, I would get rid of that.
If you're listening, Blizzard, you got a good writing core. Let them redo it.
But at any rate, you know, I don't hate Medan. I certainly don't get the way some people do. Like, God. Now, you know, I get why people do that. But now that you've brought him up, I would like to see him again. I don't think I want to see him as my follower, because
that would be real weird real quick.
Yeah, it would be like, okay.
And to be clear, I don't hate him either. I just love giving Audi Luke, you know, the guff whenever I can.
Well, it is Joe. But yeah, I think there are a few other characters I can think of that I'd like to see. I really would love to see, this character is not one that I necessarily want to be my follower, but it's one I definitely want to see in this expansion. I want to see Tiff and Wren.
Yeah.
more than I want to see Varian Wrynn. Not because I hate Varian. I don't. I think Varian had a good send-off. We've never got to see anything from Tiffin.
Yeah, maybe instead of Anduin, when we could talk about this on Lore Watch. Actually, this might be something I write down for us to bring up on Sunday. The idea of instead of Anduin getting reconciliation with his father's spirit, maybe he meets his mother.
I think to a certain degree, Anduin has gotten all from Varian that Varian could give him.
I think meeting his mother might be better.
At least he's got nothing from her. He never got to know her. He never met her. I don't even think she had any living family.
No. No. At least none that we know of.
Grandparent, you know, Illyrian that we've ever heard of. So, yeah, I think that would be interesting. I would actually like to see Tiffin Wrynn show up again. But we should probably move on because otherwise we could probably keep talking about
that. The next one is a little bit existential, and this one's from Riptides. There's an episode of Black Mirror, San Junipero, where you upload a copy of yourself into a virtual world when you die to live the rest of your days. Theological implications aside, if you had to do something similar and your choices were any single zone in WoW, which zone would you choose and why?
Duracell anymore.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's kind of gone. For me, this is gonna sound a little bit odd probably to a bunch of folks since I've been such a big Horde player over the years. Dunmorog. I have always felt at home in the Dwarfland. It's always been this comforting place for me, just in general concept. So if that was gonna be it, I could live out the rest of my virtual days in that zone, no problem. Until the servers went dark. I mean, good beer, good hunting, fights to be had, good commerce, camaraderie. Like, what's not to love about that area? And, you know, you get to be on Trogs. Great fun. What about you?
Well, first off, as a Trog, my attorney will be contacting you. no, I think for me, it's Warlords of Draenor, Shadowmoon Valley.
Mm, yeah, I can see that.
First of all, I hate the sun. I hate being exposed to its horrible withering rays. And thanks to the, you know, repeated eye surgeries, I'm super light sensitive. Like, I go outside and the sun's out. I'm basically, if I'm not wearing sunglasses, I cannot see. And I'm in a lot of pain. So you're telling me it's always nighttime? Yeah, sign me up. It's always nighttime and I didn't have to put out the sun to do it because I know the sun is the source of all life. If we, you know, a place where we could have permanent night, I'm down. It's not as depressing as the other place where I could have permanent night, namely Darkshore. So that's a plus. In general, yeah, I think, honestly, for me, I think it's Shadowmoon Valley. Plus, the Draenei are cool. I like the Draenei. I actually retired my one of my Draenei warriors. I'm still not playing him. I retired him to the garrison in Shadowmoon Valley, and I just left him there. That's where he is right now. So I have another one because, you know, I wasn't going to not have a Draenei warrior. That's crazy. But yeah, I think it'd be Shadowmoon Valley. I think that's where I would want to go. If I had to go to a WoW zone, then it would definitely be Shadowmoon Valley.
Fair enough. Our next question comes from Zool. A question for, well, it was originally for the queue, but we're taking it for here. Haha. How many reps per covenant are there? There's the standard rep everyone grinds, a special covenant only rep, and now the activity reps. But how many does your character have to grind? A bonus point question, and if we changed covenant and decided to come back again, are those reps still there, or do they need to be raised all over again? I think the next part's about it as well, too, right? Or is that, I think it's the Torghast part is with that? Torghast is fun, in my opinion. It's a separate thing? Okay, I didn't see a name with it. Apologies.
Previous episode that we did.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, never mind. It's been a week, folks. I'm sorry. So, yeah, so go for it. How many? I don't know how many Covenant reps there are. I know.
I don't either. Straight up, I barely got one. As soon as I got one character to 60, I stopped playing him, switched to my other characters, and I'm working on them. So I haven't even picked a Covenant yet.
I know that I have two for Arnwell that I'm working with, because there's the... Night Court
doesn't count as a. It's not exactly a reputation. It's similar to a reputation, but it's not exactly a reputation. Mm-hmm. Then there's Vehari, who has her own thing going. That's kind of like a reputation, but it's different.
She has a trust bar.
But she's, that's not related to covenants. Everybody has Vehari. I think that for most covenants, there's the quartermasters who are in areas, like you can get gear from them, and they're like, there's ones in Bastion, in Revendreth, in Maldraxxus, and Ardenweald. I don't think they're specifically Covenant related, but they are reputations that you get.
Yeah, I think there's one. I think there is one specific for your Covenant, right? And then there's the armies of, essentially, because if you look at the reps that you earn for going out and doing the quests for all of them, it's always like it's the Resistance for Revendreth. It's I forgot what the army is, the military force of Bastion is called. It's the Wild Hunt for Ardenweald. It's the army of, or the Undeath army or something like that for Maldraxxus. And those don't change. Those are the same across the board, no matter what you do. And then if you choose the Covenant, you get a Covenant specific one, like in Ardenweald. I always call it Night Court, but it's not Night Court. It's Court of Night, which is that particular zone's one. So I think there's only two. One that's Covenant specific, and then the one that's the general. Like,
basically, when you do a calling, you're doing a calling for the general.
Yeah. And I don't know how it interacts when you change your Covenant. I haven't looked into it that much. If they're trying to be nice about it, like they have with some of the past with, thank you, Padilla, Army of the Undying. In the past, when you faction change, they would try to do an equivalent they would try to make a cohesive rep switch. So like, you know, X would translate into Y on the other side. I don't know if they do that now, because I don't plan on changing my my Covenant, but it's definitely something to look into. If they're nice about it, it would just transfer over. If not, you're probably going to be grinding again. So, yeah, I don't know. Anything else to add to that one?
Not really.
Okay, now this one's from Easy Target, and I apologize. Torghast is fun, in my opinion. A lot of fun. Solo to five-man. Crazy powers. Lots of shuffling of powers, mobs, levels, and players. I think they may have the outline of a fun standalone game. Well, I think so, at least. But what do you think?
It's obviously inspired by several standalone games. I mean, it's pretty inspired by roguelikes. It's also draws some legends from riffs from Diablo 3. Definitely get to draw some of that to a degree. I mean, obviously, games like Hades is a big influence. I think Hades has been a big influence on everything. Supergiant tends to do that. They make a game that maybe doesn't necessarily reach a huge audience. They're somewhat niche, but they tend to influence everybody in game development.
Mm-hmm.
Bastion definitely did that. And I think that Hades has definitely done that as well. I know people who know about video games, people who are deep into video games, are playing the heck out of Hades.
Yep.
But who just, you know, it's not widespread. It's just the way of it with Supergiant games. But definitely that's Torghast is influenced by all that. I think Torghast is my favorite thing they've done this expansion. I haven't gotten into them much in the actual game because I played it so much on the beta that I'm a little, I need time away from it before I can go back into it. But yeah, Torghast is kind of terrifyingly good, in my opinion.
I think it's really accessible. I think it is a surprisingly good piece of content. It's better than I anticipated. I play a lot of roguelikes. Like, most of my Steam library, if you were to go through it, is weird RPGs or roguelikes for the most part. And so, like, I like those types of games. I like games that are not static, that have replayability based purely off of the feedback loop that you're sort of getting into. And this does that. You have a goal. There are things that repeat themselves, but not dissimilar to Slay the Spire or, you know, Hades or Binding of Isaac. The floors may have like the same number of levels you go through, but how they look, how you interact with them, the order in which you move through them changes. I don't know how infinite it is in its construction, because I have already seen some map tiles repeat, and I haven't played a whole lot of it. But I think it's a really cool concept, and I think it's a lot of fun. My only gripe with it is I wish you had more than two sections a week to choose from, as far as like what you're going to do your runs through. Because I've seen, what is it, the Shattered something or other multiple times at this point, and since the expansion came out, and I haven't seen, I missed the Soul Forges.
I think they just opened two new ones, though, so you might get to see more.
Yeah,
they've levels. So
now, as far as it being a standalone game, maybe. I don't know if it's enough of a concept to break it out all of it on its own for Blizzard to really invest in, especially when the roguelike market is incredibly saturated. I mean, Rogue Legacy 2 just came out. Spelunky 2 just came out. Those are both roguelikes. Rogue Legacy is one of the definitive roguelikes. Binding of Isaac's getting a new content update. We just talked about Hades. Crypt of the Necrodancer, the Hyrule Necrodancer version. Like, there's a ton of roguelike games out there. Does Blizzard really want to creep into that market? They could, but would it be as good as Torghast is in context of WoW? Because
I think you're onto something with that statement. I think that Torghast works pretty well as like a unique form of solo to slash group content. It takes a lot of what we've seen in previous stuff, like the rogue, like the Mage Tower, and the Terrific Visions, and makes it a full fledged feature that works pretty well and has expandability. But in terms of it actually just being a game, I mean, maybe you could make it a mobile game, but I don't think it wouldn't feel as good as it does to take your World of Warcraft character into Torghast. I think that's the place where it reels best.
Yeah, and I think part of it also is because we have a connection to Torghast in context of WoW, which I think plays into it a lot. Because when we're going in there, we're going in not just for like the fun of it, which you can do, but story-wise, your character has a reason that they're going in. They're trying to rescue or get information or spy or do whatever. And it sort of ties into the greater universe. And because of that, I think it gives it a little more legs without overdeveloping the feature. So it could, but I don't know that it ever would. And I don't know that it would.
Quote Ian Malcolm.
What's that?
Quote Ian Malcolm. You know, your scientists were so busy trying to figure out if they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
They should. Yeah, that's a really good one.
Should they do this here? I don't think they should. I think Torghast is in a really good place. And that's the place it should be.
Now, that said, we did have a question a while back about other genres we'd like to see Blizzard get back into or get into for the first time. Who knows if they're going to expand that or what they're looking at or what they're targeting. I think that with their IPs or a new IP, they could do whatever they so choose to do. And if they threw their full weight behind it, I'm sure it would be a pretty great product if they want. I think that's going to do it for us, unless you have any more that you want to go through.
I do know that we're at pretty much the end of the show, and I feel really bad. I should have put the question at the end of the email earlier in the email, but I didn't. And now, so the second week, we're pushing this one back. It's a really involved question, guys. Like, I want to get to it, but it's huge. It would take us 20 minutes to read the email and then actually start answering it. So this is on me. This is my bad. I'm sorry.
I wouldn't say that we are blessed with a cornucopia of questions from you, our listeners, and thank you for that. But Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast, site, and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you, Joe. Again, guys, if you have an email or a question for the podcast, you can get it to us either by emailing it, podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for the show, or you can use our Discord server. We have two channels open, the podcast queue and is it podcast queue? No, it's queue and podcast and I don't blargity blarg.
They're labeled. They're labeled clearly.
Patron Q and podcast questions. There, I got it. Just needed a sec. Or you can go to the Q questions channel. Either of those will work. We take questions from both of those. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. Thank you guys so much for being here with us and for being active in the chat, which is really useful. Thank you guys for that. We're going to be here again next week. I do know that the holidays are coming up, but I don't think Tuesday is a bad day on either of those, so we're probably just going to do the show as normal. If something comes up, we will let you know in advance. I wanted to put that out there. I know for a lot of people, this is going to be a really weird year holidays-wise. For me, too. So we're going to keep that in mind.
There is one other thing I would like to add, too. We are coming up on our 300th episode of this podcast, which is mind-blowing for any podcast that has ever existed in the history of time. Getting to that level of interaction, having that many episodes is incredible. I kind of want to do something special for that 300. So you, our listeners out there, if you have something you'd like to hear or something you think would be fun for our 300th episode, let us know and we can see if we can do something. And before anybody says anything, the one caveat is having Anne on is always going to be in any capacity with it is going to be probably a no-go just due to the nature of how the industry works. Anybody who guests on any of our podcasts when they're tied up, especially with Blizzard, we have to go through a ton of vetting, even with history. So that's the one thing, please don't ask for. We'd love to have her back, but that's a really difficult ask.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening to the show. We'll be here next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.